episode of 2014. Welcome back. Welcome back, Dave.
Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you. Welcome
back. Happy New Year.
Audience, Happy New Year.
Last week,
or a couple weeks ago, if you listen to this way in the future. Let's get apologies out of the way first. If you don't know, it's been really cold here in Northeastern Ohio. So
my car didn't start the other day.
I was gonna say the internet wasn't working, yeah. But I guess Dave let the cat out of the bag. The internet was working. His car was not. So we're gonna get at you a little bit late this week, unless you normally listen to us on the weekend, in which case we are right on time, so no worries. But what better way to start off the new year than looking back at last year, giving you our favorite movies of 2013. The tagline for this episode, Good Girls Gone Bad. I think that's an apt description of Dave and I, and also an apt description of this particular movie.
That's actually my New Year's resolution.
Is going bad or becoming a girl?
Good Girls Gone Bad. That's just my New Year resolution.
Fair enough. It doesn't matter. Most people drop them anyway, so I don't have to really understand what yours means. But if you understand what the tagline, Good Girls Gone Bad, means, if you can figure out where that movie is from, please send your guess over to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your answer directly at us at moviesonup on the Twitter. Leave your answer on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or head over to Movies On Up, and you can try and leave a comment there, but there's so many, like, comments about purses.
I haven't checked the spam in
forever. It's full. It's chock full of stuff I don't understand, so that probably won't get through there, but Movies On Up is your home for all things On Up. Good Girls Gone Bad, the tagline for this week. If you figure out what it is, if you're correct, if we pick you, you win a prize package, which is new and improved for 2014.
Yeah, the 2014 prize packages are way better than the 2013.
Absolutely. So if you got a 2013 one, sorry.
Try again.
Play again in 2014, and I'm sure you'll be way more impressed than you were last year. Speaking of being impressed last year, obviously that is kind of what we're talking about here today, is movies that impressed us last year. And you kind of brought it up a couple weeks ago about what the overall impressions of 2013 as a movie year. And I didn't really have a good answer for you at the time, but I think I had a better handle on things after doing my list. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting year, because I feel like in 2012, I didn't go back and listen, but I feel like that episode was pretty much like...
Why would you? It was garbage.
Yeah, I feel like that episode was us pretty much saying, like, yeah, I loved a handful of movies, but had trouble filling out the top 10 because you didn't like anything enough, but... This year, I had it down to like 30 movies that I had to whittle down, and I got it down to, you know...
10, hopefully.
I got it to 16 before I really had to really get into it. So, I mean, as far as stuff that I really, really enjoyed, this was a really good year, because I go 16 deep. Like, there's six that I also want to mention in my also-rans, because if they don't come up in yours, like, they're phenomenal movies, and it just seemed like a fun year for movies, almost.
I think that's kind of the way I was thinking about it. It was a fun year for movies. There were a lot of movies that I liked. Last year, there was a pretty wide chasm between movies that I loved and movies that were like, yeah, okay, I'm not going to be embarrassed to have this on my list.
I guess last year there were movies I loved.
Yeah.
And then there was stuff that I liked.
Sure.
I don't think there's that gap this
year. No, there's just a bunch of stuff that I liked.
There's stuff that I really liked. Like, all the stuff this year, I really enjoyed it. But I don't think there's one that I mean, there's
not
a couple,
even your number one.
There's a couple that, like, my top three are solid.
Sure.
They're Brit heavy, but
I'm sure they are.
I think they're like, the gap between how much I like the first one and how much I like the last one is smaller than it has been in previous years.
Yeah, to me, I don't know that there were
consistent year, I
right?
Guess.
That there were a bunch of movies that necessarily jumped out. I think top to bottom, it was a pretty good year. There were a lot of good movies to check out. I don't know that this is going to be a year that we necessarily remember for the amount of great. It's not like a 1994, you know, where you can rattle off three, yeah, four films off the top of your head that were just amazing.
I mean, Wolf and American Hustle and stuff like that. I think the Oscar contenders, I think this is a good year for Oscar, because I think the movies are legitimately,
yeah,
good.
They're
I
good.
Think they're good movies.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like...
And they don't feel award-y, if that makes sense.
The ones that I've seen to this point, no, they really don't. But the hell with it. Like, why beat around the bush and talk about movies that maybe maybe you're really good, maybe you're not bad. Let's do the straight dope. Dave, let's get right down to it. Your 10th favorite movie of 2013.
10th was the hardest spot because I got 1 through 9, and then 10, there were still 7 movies fight for that spot. But it was very high on my list at the halftime show, and I just could not leave it off because I do absolutely love it. It's one of the best screen villains of all time. It is Star Trek Into Darkness. I left the movie theater thinking this is a perfect movie because it was exactly what I wanted it to be. And we did an episode on it twice.
Because it was so good. Yeah. So nice we episoded it twice.
I mean, I really enjoyed it. So even rewatching it, like, I love the movie. And it's perfect. I mean, it's really the only one that I would consider a blockbuster on here. And it's the perfect blockbuster. It had enough story to keep you into it. The acting was phenomenal top to bottom. Yeah, there was some stuff that maybe wasn't necessary in there. But Cumberbatch was amazing and just a perfect villain. So I can't wait to see him do that in Star Wars.
Hell of a year for Cumberbatch. Yeah. I mean, Star Trek, if you want to count, I count The Hobbit. I mean, the dragon, that's pretty serious, yeah, for him.
Osage County.
Yeah.
WikiLeaks.
12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, he's been in some pretty good movies. I actually don't think, I'm just kind of scrolling my list right now, spoiler alert, I don't think I have any Benedict Cumberbatch films. Although we just rattled off quite a few that are good, but I think that's just going to, the higher we get on the list, that's just going to kind of prove how hard it was to cut things down.
Because I love that movie.
I like it a lot too.
I love Star Trek, that movie. And
right.
I mean, that's my number 10. So I'm already excited just talking about that movie. And I have 9 more to go.
Sure. Obviously,
I'm stoked.
I don't have any Cumberbatch movies, so Star Trek's not on my list. It's not my number 10. But my number 10 is a sci-fi movie. And it's a movie I saw pretty early in the year. I think it was on my halftime list. I mean, it probably had to be. If it made my end of the year, I haven't seen it since then. But it is Oblivion, the Tom Cruise joint. I do like some sci-fi. I'm a nerd. What can I say? What can I say about this movie without giving too much away? Not much, I think. I'll probably reiterate a lot of the things I said at halftime. I think the look of the movie was really cool. It's, for a futuristic sci-fi movie, it's pretty sparse, which I was kind of into. And I think it does kind of have a pretty slow burn by the time they really introduce some of the characters. You spend a lot of time with just Tom Cruise and his partner. But it works. I think there is some elements of it that were, storytelling-wise, were a bit poor. Like, you know, you've got your criticisms about Star Trek. I have similar criticisms about Oblivion. But I think there were a lot of good sci-fi flicks this year. Star Trek, Oblivion, Elysium. I'm not sure if that makes your list. It doesn't make mine. But I like that movie an awful lot, too. But I think that top to bottom on all of them, there were kind of flaws, especially from a story standpoint on the three of those. But I probably had the lowest expectations for Oblivion than I did out of Star Trek and definitely with Elysium. And I think maybe that's why I like it as much as I did, because I didn't really expect much going in. And like, man, Tom Cruise, still a movie star.
I believe it was actually your number one at halftime.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. It might have been. I like some Oblivion.
My number 9, going overseas. It's a movie I love the trailer. If you listen to our Uppies episode, it was nominated for Best Trailer. It is Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa. Steve Coogan, he's had the character for over 20 years now of Alan Partridge. And you see why in this movie. Like, he takes a character that old and showcases everything that's made it so popular and so great. And that's why people have laughed at him for so long. And in the process, made a pretty decent movie. I mean, it actually, there's growth in the character. There's growth in the side characters. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's reminiscent of Airheads, which is a radio station hostage movie, but with a better personality and just, I mean, Steve,
I think it was funnier.
Way funnier.
But that's maybe my sense of humor, and yours as well.
Just as we were off mic, I didn't expect Ryan to have seen this movie. We were reminiscing about,
because I don't watch movies,
some of the gags, like him coming out of the window and him in the toilet. Like, just, there's really, really funny laughs It's a nice mix of the gags are great when there are sight gags, and then the dialogue is just funny. And he's so good, and I really love Steve Coogan, and he should be bigger over here. Like, he's having good success, but he should be a bigger star. Like, I feel like Hamlet 2 should have launched him into being one of our bigger, like, I mean, Hamlet 2 wasn't as good as it should have been.
I was going to say, like,
he should be one of our comedic leading men over
this
here.
This movie was hilarious. Hamlet 2 was okay. I just think that maybe that's kind of, by and large, you know, the comedies that seem to do real well. Like, if you think of Ted last year, really funny, but funny in a completely different way.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a very British movie.
Absolutely.
This is a British movie. Like, it's the British sense of humor. I don't even know if it got a release over here. Honestly, like
efforting
a theatrical release. Huh?
Efforting that.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure that. We've got our research team on it.
Yeah, but it's just so funny. It is very British, so it does hit a certain sense of humor, but it's so funny. And just fun. Like, it's hard to watch it and not just smile and laugh the whole time.
It is among the funniest movies that I've seen this year. I'd say it's in the top five easily. It's funnier than those End of the World flicks. That is for sure. My number nine, there were a lot of End of the World flicks this year. There were also a couple movies about sex addiction. And I really thought that Don Juan was going to be amazing. Turns out my number nine is Thanks for Sharing, the other sex addiction movie from
the pink one,
2013. Yes, the one with Alicia Moore. I liked Don Juan well enough. It gave me pretty much what I thought I was going to get. But from Thanks for Sharing, very pleasantly surprised by this movie. You have really kind of three stories that resolve each other, kind of weave in and out of each other. And I really found myself interested in two of the three stories. I think that Mark Ruffalo, Tim Robbins, Josh Gad all have some really cringe-worthy moments, all being addicts. And they're all, it's hard to say that Tim Robbins was outshined by Mark Ruffalo and Josh Gad, but he kind of was. I mean, Tim Robbins, great actor. And the performance was fine, and maybe it's just his character I didn't like as much as the other two. But, you know, you root for them all to get their shit together, and you're not really sure how things are going to work out for any of them. But I thought, you know, having seen Frozen like a couple weeks before, it was funny to see the snowman addicted to porn. So that was great. But, I mean, I thought it was a pretty decent movie. You've got, like I said, you've got three stories that you really do want to see resolved. And you can kind of see it going one of two ways. And at least I felt like I was invested in it. So, I mean, I don't know that this is necessarily like a great romantic comedy, but I don't know. I don't like romantic comedies. So if I had to watch one, I'd check it out.
It seems like this one kind of flew under the radar.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
I mean, it's got Ruffalo. It's got Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah. Didn't even mention her.
Good for Josh Gad.
Alicia Moore.
Yeah. Josh Gad has so much talent, but he's been making terrible choices outside of Book of Mormon. So, like, with Frozen and this seems to be okay, but this came out of left field. I would not have expected this on any list.
To be honest with you, I really didn't expect it either. And again, maybe that's a bit of the Oblivion scenario where I didn't expect much.
So you can't be let down.
Right, and I certainly wasn't at all. But I really, it shouldn't have been the kind of movie that I liked. I should have liked Don John a lot more. And I just didn't. This one completely caught me off guard. And I'm glad it did. It was Gad.
Oh, boo. That was not. My number eight. I'm excited. Like, this episode, I was so bummed when my car didn't start when we were supposed to record this earlier this week, because I've been amped to do this episode because I love all these movies. Number eight, I feel like almost any other year, this is a top two or three movie for me because it was so good. It is The Way, Way Back, written and directed by Jim Rash and Nat Faxon, starring Steve Carell, Anna Sophia Robb or whatever her name is, Sam Rockwell, most notably.
Yeah, he's in there.
That movie's so good. Like, as far as a feel-good, like, I talk about Alpha Pop, but just making you smile and laugh through that. This had the moments, like, the feel-good moments make you feel great. The not-feel-good moments make you feel really bad for the kid. And it's just, I feel like this year of all years, we really got the coming of age story right, because this, there's another one that didn't make my list. And
didn't make my list either. Kings of Summer?
Kings of Summer. Yeah. I was thinking of another one even.
Oh, okay.
That I'll save because it's going to be in my also-rans. But I feel like this was a really good year for coming-of-age stories, because Way, Way Back is so good. It's such a good coming-of-age story. Kings of Summer was good, but...
You may not have to mention your other one.
I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Kings of Summer kind of fell apart closer to the end, but it was still really good, really funny. Way, Way Back was a nice balance where it had heart, it had humor, and there was something there to keep you into it. You had the sensitivity there. Like, you felt for him. You wanted not just him, you wanted his mom to be fine. And it proved, I mean, if you ever want to call Steve Carell a one-trick pony, watch this movie. He's one of the most likable guys in Hollywood, and you cannot like him in this movie. He's one of the biggest pricks ever. Like, he's so good because
he's a terrible human being in pretty much every...
Yeah, I mean, he's not the guy that's gonna beat your mom if he's dating her, but he's the last guy you want your mom to date. So I mean, he played that role perfectly, and it was just such a good movie.
I agree so much. We might talk about it way, way up in my list somewhere, but my number 8 is, talked about those Oscar movies, I don't really have a lot of them on my list. I liked them, but I don't know that I loved them enough to where I'm going to want to rewatch them. Not necessarily the case with my number 8. I like it. I'd rewatch it again. Sure. I'd rewatch it again, if for no other reason than to see Jennifer Lawrence. American Hustle is my number 8. Didn't like this one as much as I thought that I was going to. With that being said, I thought that Amy Adams and Christian Bale were tremendous.
I thought Amy Adams and Bradley Cooper were tremendous.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with Cooper either. I mean, Amy Adams, that's...
She stole the movie.
Give her the trophy, I think.
Not even because of the dresses, but just...
Oh, yeah, no.
She stole this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, you say your thing and then I'll chip in. Because,
I mean, she's playing two characters in the movie, really. And she pulls them off both phenomenally. Talk about Amy Adams stealing the movie. For me, it really actually was Jennifer Lawrence. In a smaller role, far-fetched scenario, the whole point of the movie. But, you know, she seemed like a character, almost like that New Jersey-type housewife.
Believable character. Yeah,
believable,
yeah.
And relatable. I don't know that I could relate to the con men, but, like, her character was kind of like a touching point, I think, for most people. And every scene she was in, it was like... knowing a train wreck was going to happen and watching to see what she would do to screw everything up. And it was, I thought it was really kind of a fun role for her. I didn't think that it needed to be a funny movie. I think they tried to force some of the humor, and I don't feel like they had to because the performances in there were so good. And the story is compelling, but it just seemed like some of the humor was kind of shoehorned in there. Who am I guess, to criticize the great David O. Russell? But I think that, you know, just the laughs were played far more than they needed to be. The performances in the movie were more than enough to hold it up, I think.
Yeah, and I love this movie, but it didn't make my top 10. It didn't even make the top 16. It was hard to come off of Silver Linings because I loved Silver Linings so much.
Yeah, exactly.
This one, it was coming off of those expectations. It was really good. I felt like it started a little slow. I felt like it took too long to get going with the back and forth monologues and stuff. But I thought Cooper was phenomenal. I thought Adams was phenomenal. I thought Adams stole it. Everything you said about Lawrence is dead on, but I still feel like she was like fourth on the totem pole as far as, but that's how good it was from an acting standpoint.
I think maybe, you know, obviously with the exception of Bradley Cooper, I mean, Amy Adams was nominated. Christian Bale wasn't nominated, but having won before, he's a guy that you kind of expect that from. And not that, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, not like she's never won anything before, but I guess I didn't expect a lot from her in this movie because I knew it wasn't her movie.
But, she did steal the scene she was in. And even Renner was really good as that likable.
Very likable.
Likable guy. And Louis C.K., fantastic, but
there were some good cameos.
Every point you made about the humor is dead on, because when it was if this doesn't win any, this should be in all the acting categories. This, I don't, it's not the best film I saw this year. It's some of the best acting. So I wouldn't be opposed to it winning some acting awards, but
I think Amy Adams definitely.
I think it could absolutely win a screenplay award because it's written so sharply, and the stuff that's well written is extremely well written. The whole ongoing thing about the Louis C.K. story about
the ice
brother,
fishing story, yeah,
that's so brilliant because it's, I mean, when you can call something back three or four times and still never resolve it, like he never like that's the not spoiler alert. But it's such a good callback, and the situation and the characters lended themselves to comedy so well that you're dead on about the humor that it was too forced, because the biggest laugh out loud moment to me was Bradley Cooper sitting on the couch after Louis C.K. leaves the room. Like, that's not forced in there. That fits in with the scenario. And it was the big, like, that moment. Just thinking about it makes me laugh just because just what he's doing. And there's no joke there. It's just his actions are just so funny. And there was a lot of that in the movie. And I just feel like it kind of got in its way at times. I do really like it. I did enjoy it. But I wouldn't put it in my top 16. But it's, that's how much I like some of these other movies, because that movie was really good.
It was in my top 8. Now to your top 7.
My number 7, a movie that I would have expected it to be higher than it ended up. Upon first watch, maybe it wasn't in my top 10, but upon second watch and third watch, it's The World's End. It'd be hard for Edgar Wright to make a movie and not make my list. Because
Scott Pilgrim.
Other than that. Because at this point, I love everything Edgar Wright does. At this one, I really, it's one of those that has grown on me. Like, I was rewatching Hot Fuzz the other day, and how much I love Hot Fuzz now is nowhere near how much I didn't love Hot Fuzz upon first watching. And you watch it now, and it's, Hot Fuzz is almost as flawless as Shaun of the Dead. It didn't hit me right away. The last maybe 5-10 minutes of The World's End is the only thing I complain about, but it still doesn't take away everything else. The story of, I mean, I'm a sucker for friendship stories. I am a sucker for them, and addiction. And I think Simon Pegg gave one of the best performances in an actual comedy that I remember in a long time, because it's legit acting performance that he did. And the action, everything about it was good. The sci-fi was dead on. The action was way better than you'd expect.
The fight scenes were, for the guys that were pulling them off.
Yes, way better than you'd expect from this movie.
From this lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you didn't like it as much as you probably expected to.
No, I liked it about exactly as much as I expected it to.
I expected it to be way higher up my list. It wasn't, but I still love it to death.
I'm sorry, Dave.
The World's End.
My number 7... The World's End is not necessarily a horror comedy movie, but you wouldn't slap somebody if they called it that. My number 7 is, and again, this is one that might have flown under the radar for some people, but I've been kind of banging the drum for this since I saw Stitches. It is not my favorite horror flick of the year, which we had a pretty decent amount of good horror movies this year, but I think it's by far the most enjoyable and the most accessible of the movies that I'm going to talk about. A lot of fun right from the start. It is a British movie, but the deaths are just way, way, way over the top, but so funny. I think my favorite one, not to give too much away, but there's all the kids. It's about this clown that gets killed at a kid's birthday party. And when he comes back to seek his revenge, he kind of kills the kids in ways that kind of call back to their behavior as children. And the one kid was getting on his case about making balloon animals. And when he goes back to kill the kid, he ends up making like a balloon animal out of his guts and then sticks a balloon pump in his head and blows it up. It's crazy. It's way over the top gory, but it's a lot of fun. And maybe I have some kind of mental issue. I'm not sure. But I really liked Stitches. Thought the gore was really fun. Good horror comedy. Probably more horror than comedy, but
actually have not seen that one. So
check it out.
Yeah, I will. It's just weird because I was just talking, Rick of the Dead, our friend who loves horror, we were talking the other day, and horror's kind of in a slump. I think.
Like, I beg to differ.
See, I feel like years past, you would have movies like Stitches, like your Underground or your British ones that yeah. were kind of like sneak under the radar and be really, really good. But this year, like when I think back at 2013 in horror, I come up with your next, and that's about
that's
it.
That's not bad. It's
that
not
your
on my
was
list.
Great. It's in my top 16. It didn't make my top 10, but I feel like outside of that, horror was kind of lame this year.
I've got another one. I mean, Stitches. Rick and Rick liked Stitches, didn't he?
I don't. It didn't come up.
Oh. Well, I talked to Buffalo Dave Gordon. He liked it. So I think that Stitches is a good one. I think Your Next is a good one. And I've got another one that's a bit higher on my list that, again, I'm going to kind of bang the drum on. And that's going to be three really, really good horror movies okay. from this year. Maybe it's a slump. I don't think so. But I'm not done with my argument.
Outside of those three, though. But my number six. We're going to my number six.
How many do you have to have, damn it?
12.
All right. Okay.
One per month.
All right. Fair enough.
My number six is a director who is no stranger to my top 10 of the year list.
Is it Edgar Wright?
He topped it a couple years, and he topped my favorite movies ever list. It is Trance, directed by Danny Boyle, returning back to the movies that made me love Danny Boyle. He had success with 127 Hours and Slumdog Millionaire.
I would say.
Those are my least
success,
favorite
yeah.
Danny Boyle movies. So Trance was good to see him get back to his Danny Boyle-ness that made me fall in love with him with Trainspotting and Millions and 28
Sunshine.
Days Later and Sunshine. This is a trip. Like, this movie is such a ride. And the plot is so simple. And you can sum it up in a sentence. Basically, I mean, you could get the gist of what happened. It's the kind of thing where you could say what it's about in a sentence.
And it wouldn't give anything away.
It wouldn't give anything away, and it makes you wonder, how do you get a whole movie out of this? But they do.
Yeah.
McAvoy, phenomenal in this movie. Vincent Cassel, awesome in this movie. Rosario Dawson, naked in this movie.
Yes, awesomely naked.
And awesome. Like, it just, the performances are so good, and it keeps you guessing. Talk about twists.
Absolutely.
Like, people don't like the biggest complaint people have about Sunshine is that Danny Boyle didn't make just a traditional point A to point B sci-fi movie. Like, he threw a curveball in there, and by the end you got a completely different movie, and I like that. And he did that with Trance, like, without spoiling anything. Like,
you get like two or three different movies.
It ends as a completely different movie than you think you're going in to watch. And just everything about it, the fact that he can nail it, like he can go in there and say, I know your conventional movie watching habits. I'm going to just throw them out the window for the next 2 hours and you're still going to love it. And I did, because Trance was awesome.
I liked it a lot. I didn't put it on my list because I kind of figured that you did. And there's a lot of those British movies that just didn't make my list. Although Stitches is Irish, so it's from the same area. My number six is not Irish. It is a movie that you and I like, but apparently nobody else did. And we're kind of scratching our heads as to why that is. I mean, what if you were going to just throw stuff at a wall, like what would succeed in the summer? Well, you got what's more likely than a movie with monsters and giant robots? Pacific Rim. But if you look at the box office performance of this movie, apparently giant robots plus monsters does not equal dollar signs. Who knew?
In the States, at least.
This is true.
Overseas, it's going to make enough to get a sequel.
Yes. We can argue, I guess, about how the movie was marketed. I know that that's something that sticks in your craw, that it was maybe marketed as more of a dumb monster movie. But it's definitely not. There is a lot more to it than that. There's a lot of depth to the characters, which you don't typically see in a giant punching robot movie. But I thought the visuals were really tremendous. All of the monsters and each of the robots have their own look. They have their own mannerisms, I guess you'd say. And again, the characters weren't just throwaway characters for the most part. They all had a little bit of things to do. And I think that Charlie Hunnam definitely could be a movie star. This should have kind of helped him get there, but it didn't. And that's unfortunate. I do hope that the movie does get the sequel, and I hope that more people see it, because I think that it was really good.
And this is another one. I love this movie. It was really tough between this and Star Trek on my 10th, because I got through 9 and I thought, I don't have either one of those on there. And those were the two main ones that, like this would be my 11, probably. Like, if we could take it up to 11, this would be there.
Turn it up to 11.
Because I really, and yeah, the movie had flaws. Yes, who cares? It delivered the awesome robot monster action, but then gave you enough else there.
Gave some human story.
Yeah, enough human. Couple. I mean, it's not on par with American Hustle or any of these other character-driven movies, but it's enough there. It's not Battleship. It's not just a dumb action blockbuster. Like, there was enough there to keep me into it. And this is actually probably the only movie me and you watched together this year.
I think it may have been.
And it was complete luck.
Complete by chance.
I showed up at the movie theater. Ryan was there. So that was pretty weird.
Coincidence.
But I did like that movie. Not as much as I liked my number 5 movie. We're going to stay with the sci-fi theme and maybe some robot elements. It's from a director that topped my list a few years ago. It is Neil Blomkamp's Elysium. I love this movie so much. This has everything that I wanted. This has everything that I wanted from Star Trek and Pacific Rim, but to a higher level. It has the great characters. It has the great acting. It has the awesome story. And, I mean, Charlton Copley alone is worth watching this movie for. That guy.
He's a maniac.
Phenomenal. And to just look at the progression of the character he played in District 9 compared to the character he played in Elysium. Talk about covering both ends of the spectrum. That shows how talented. I mean, he had another good movie this year called Open Grave that was awesome, and that, he was the leading guy in that. So, I mean, he's had a good year, but I loved everything about Elysium. I thought Matt Damon was perfect in that role. I thought he was really good. I like the female lead relationship there, because it wasn't necessarily a romantically driven thing. And you can actually write males and females that know each other that don't have to end up making out. Yeah. And I like that. I liked what Jodie Foster brought. I like the idea of it. And I mean, he's so good at social commentary where he kind of shoves it down your throat, but doesn't. Like, he shoves it down your throat, but it's in such a different world that it doesn't feel like it's being shoved down your throat, if that makes any sense. Like,
using sci-fi as kind of a means to couch it, I guess, is much different. This, I feel like this one, the social aspects of it were a little more, they beat you over the head with it than District 9, and maybe that's because we're not South Africans. So, you know, the apartheid is not as much a part of our lives as universal healthcare. But, I mean, I like the movie. I'm not surprised that it's in your list. I didn't want to go real sci-fi heavy on here. I guess I feel like Pacific Rim and Oblivion, I enjoyed both of those movies a lot more, although I did like Elysium. I mean, the action in that's ridiculous.
The action's phenomenal. The fighting, and like I said, Copley. Charlton Copley is awesome in this movie, and it's one of those that gets you amped up during the fight scenes and then gives you goosebumps during the not fight scenes. Like, there's a... You feel for Matt Damon. You understand his mission, and you understand that it's bigger than him. Like, it starts off, that's his mission, but then he realizes there's a bigger purpose. And to watch his character grow through that, and, you know, the female lead, which I know that's so sexist, I don't even remember the actress's name. But
I mean, she really didn't have a lot to do.
She wasn't huge in the movie, right. But, I mean, she served what she was there for. And I really liked everything about this movie, and it was one of those that, I mean, any other year it would probably be higher than 5. I feel like this movie I'm gonna watch again in 10 years and go, holy crap, I forgot how good that was. Like, it's such a good, I really love this movie, and I'm on board for anything Blomkamp does. Like, he's got Chappie coming out next starring Copley, but all right, sci-fi comedy, sign me up. This guy, I don't know what else he needs to prove for me to not be a fanboy right now. So,
and I guess the one thing that I will definitely say about Elysium is where, you know, you had your complaints maybe about the ending of Star Trek, and I have mine about the ending of Oblivion. The ending of this movie was great.
Yeah. Again, it gets you pumped up during the action. It gets you chills during when it's supposed to give you chills. it accomplished what it's supposed to, what it tried to do. When it wanted you to get chills, you got chills. When you
good
want,
ride.
When you want, yeah, it's just a great ride, and this dude's such a good director.
My number five is from a director that I guess I wasn't necessarily a big honk for, but I'm beginning to become that way.
Pain and Gain?
Nope. It is not a Michael Bay film. And there's really, I was just trying to figure out a way to relate Pain and Gain to my number five, and I really can't do it. But it is one of those movies that I think you were talking about earlier, the good coming-of-age stories, and this may have been the mystery one that was floating around. And it is from James Ponsoldt. I loved Smashed. Absolutely loved that. The Spectacular Now is kind of like a high school version of that.
Yeah.
You look like you wanted to add something.
No, I mean, I'm going to let you go through because okay. I have plenty to say on The Spectacular Now.
Excellent. Charlene Woodley is great. I do have a little bit of trouble trying to buy her as the nerd that couldn't really get a date or a second look until Miles Teller starts sniffing around. It kind of seemed like the Rachel Lee Cook thing. It's like, we'll give her glasses. Oh, I don't even think they didn't even
they
give.
Didn't even try to give her glasses.
No, they were just like,
she just looked dirty.
Yeah, she's just she's not wearing makeup, and occasionally she delivers newspapers, which nobody's going to be into that. A girl that has a job, whatever. But I do think that Teller was awesome in this movie. I talked about Amy Adams playing two characters at the same time, kind of in a more subtle way. That's exactly what Miles Teller was doing in this. You have, you know, the character of the party guy, but also you can see cracks in that's not necessarily who he is. The whole time you don't know, you know, which is, you know, the real character, and you want him to get his stuff together and, you know, to make it work out with Amy, but you can really see where that's probably not gonna work. Again, it's a movie that I had not seen too much from Miles Teller before. I mean, I knew Woodley was really good, so I wasn't surprised by her. But I did think that Miles Teller was very captivating. It definitely is his movie, and I think he carries it off tremendously.
James Ponsoldt, we talk about David O. Russell, where, okay, every movie he does, he gets acting nominations for almost everything. So, you know, actors are going to beg to work with him. I think Ponsoldt is on that same level as far as acting performances. Just what he got out of Aaron Paul and Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Smashed and Nick Otto was so strong.
Yeah.
And then this movie, like, Teller has a good career ahead of him. Miles Teller is going to be awesome, and he did really well with this. And Shailene Woodley, I mean, she's already a phenomenal actress. To see her in this, and even Winstead again when she shows up in a small role, but his movies are so well acted. This was very close to the book. I do love this. It's one of the better movies I saw this year, but I did. It's in my top 16, but I didn't have it in my top 12 just because Woodley's character, for what she was given, she did great, but her character's a little one-dimensional, and I feel like that's from the book also, but I just feel like he's so good, and the everything you said about Teller is dead on, and the best scene in that movie to me, the best exchange of dialogue is
him in the store.
Bob Odenkirk saying, well, I guess if I were your dad, this is where I'd give you a lecture or something, and he says, if you were my dad, you wouldn't have to. And I feel like that summed up his character perfectly. Like, he is who he is, but because that's who he is, not because he wants to be. And it's just kind of a nature versus nurture thing where that's who he is by nature, but yet he's just begging for that nurture to not make him that. And to realize, to, you know, the self-sacrifice and not letting people in to help. And it's an addiction movie. It's absolutely an addiction movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, like, you look at Smash, I don't mean that they both have Mary Elizabeth Winstead. No, like, they are very similar in that it's about that alcohol addiction, and that seems to be really a theme in a lot of his work. But, I don't want to call him a one-trick pony because they're all awesome.
And it's a different level of alcoholism.
Yes.
Like, where Mary Elizabeth Winstead was an alcoholic. She had the sickness. I almost don't feel like Miles Teller had the sickness. I don't feel like he was an alcoholic. He was just drinking because that's what you do. That's what the popular kid from school does. And I feel like he just kind of got into that character and took it too far. Speaking of the character, like, I feel like he took the popular party high school kid that he was. He had earned that reputation and just kind of didn't know how to stop. So I definitely, he's still an alcoholic, but I don't think to the level that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, because I think he was self-aware enough to realize, I'm doing this, but I don't want to be doing this. And
I think there are more similarities between those characters than you do, definitely. But you know, it's really splitting hairs. Like
it's a good movie. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it makes me mad that Shailene Woodley wasted away on that stupid show she was on for so long, because
she'll be fine.
She's so talented. My number four, speaking of talented ladies, this is one that doesn't surprise me. It's one of those that once I heard about it, once I saw the trailer, it's like, oh, that's going to be top five of the year. And it absolutely did not disappoint. It is The East, written by Britt Marling, starring Britt Marling, and directed by Batman.
Batman, yeah.
I love this movie. It was, as much as I love Sound of the Voice, this is much more accessible.
Yeah.
This is, I don't want to say safer. It's kind of her reaching out to a larger audience, I think. Like, it's not as inside as Sound of My Voice was. And I thought she did well. I thought, like, she's a leading lady. I'm excited. She's in a Danny Boyle TV show overseas this year that I cannot wait for, because her and him working together, I'm 100% for. But she's such a good leading lady and so understated. Like, she's not your – she's gorgeous, but that's not her strength. That's not what she plays up.
No, it's the intelligence that like, when she writes, like
– She doesn't write her as this sexy, beautiful lady that can get – she writes herself as a smart, strong character. And she pulls that off insanely well, especially here. And then you have Ellen Page and Alexander Skarsgård who throw in awesome supporting roles. And it still does the – I don't know that anybody knows how to end a movie better than Britt Marling. I really don't, because if you talk about endings that once the credits roll, you think, wait, what?
Like,
I want more. Like, she's mastered that, because – Sound of My Voice, Another Earth, and this, all three of those, once the credits hit, it's like there's a sequel after the credits, right? Like, there's more to come, right? Like, I want more, and this did that perfectly.
My number four, there really aren't too many ladies in at all. Even the main character, technically, is not really on screen all that much. You get a lot of first-person perspective from him. And it is, in fact, my favorite horror movie of the year. It's Maniac. I could not have cared any less about this movie at the start of the year. You want to talk about, like, movies that maybe climbed up your draft board?
Maybe made took the McAvoy turn?
Yeah, maybe.
Because you hated this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I hated this movie.
I hated this movie even existed.
You hated this movie when we talked about the remake happening. Yep. You hated this movie when we saw a trailer.
Yep.
You hated this movie.
Hated it. I don't think we've ever had a movie have a McAvoy turn, but I guess it's possible for a movie. I really only saw it out of passing curiosity. Passed it at the movie theater or the movie store, and I was like, all right, fine. Let's see what's up. Speaking of passing, it passes my remake rule. If you're going to remake something, for the love of God, do it in your own way. And I think in no way is it derivative of the 1980 William Lustig flick. The screenplay by Alexander Aja and his buddy Levasseur adds a lot of depth to Elijah Wood's character that just wasn't in the original. And I think that Frank Calfon is the director. Did some really weird things in it. Some things that are maybe going to alienate a lot of folks, because it's not, it's kind of like an art house horror movie, but he does a lot to put you right square in the head of a maniac. And that would be kind of a weird place to inhabit. But I think it's absolutely spot on for the character. I think I don't know that it's necessarily one of the best movies of the year, but I think it was a really good horror movie, and one that I think it's better than the original. I don't love the original. This I really liked.
You hated this movie.
Hated it. Don't hate it now. It's my fourth favorite movie. Well, check it out. I don't know.
It's weird that your two horror movies on your list I haven't seen, when that's usually the first ones I see are the horror movies.
Yeah, I'm just saying, maybe you see those two movies and your opinion on horror movies this year is a little different.
My number three was my number one at the halfway point. We're going overseas. starring Rose Byrne, Rafe Spall, and a brilliant Stephen Merchant and an Anna Faris. I give it a year. I still adore this movie. I absolutely love this movie. I'm not a big romantic comedy guy, but this is kind of
The English can do it okay.
The English do it very well, and that might come up later on my list. It's very charming. It's Rafe Spall is such a fun leading guy. Like, he's so interesting and awkward in this movie. Rose Byrne, fantastic. Stephen Merchant is
steals
Stephen
it.
Merchant.
Every scene
every
he's
scene
in.
He's in. If you didn't watch Hello Ladies this year, his show on HBO, you missed out, because Stephen Merchant is one of the most brilliant, awkward but heartwarming guys along. And just, this was one of my favorite trailers of the year, because it was so joke heavy. And then you get to the movie and it's even joke heavier. One of my favorite moments in movies this year is the electronic picture frame
digital
scene.
Picture frame, yeah.
Digital picture frame scene in this movie. It's so well done. It's teased in the trailer.
And I was going to say, it's even in the trailer.
It's in the trailer, but that doesn't take away from the scene, because it's so well done, and it's even better than it is in the trailer. And it's just so good. It's a different take. It's not your typical boy meets girl, boy and girl fall in love, boy and girl end up together. It's a lot different than that. And it's not really an anti-romantic comedy, but it's
no, I wouldn't say
it's
that.
It's still a romantic comedy, which for that to be that high up on my list has to be really good. And
very English.
It's so funny. I mean, it's so just this movie. I don't know that I've ever watched a movie and just had like this feeling of joy from like a giggling standpoint so consistently all the way through, because it starts with jokes and they carry on. Like, there isn't. The jokes per second in this movie is ridiculous.
Oh, the JPS.
Yes, the
right.
JPS is
off the chart.
It's amazing. And just the awkward giggles that this movie provides are just so funny. And I absolutely adore this movie.
I liked it a lot. I did not like it as much as my number three. I wouldn't exactly say that this was a laugh a minute. The JPS in this is almost zero. But I thought it was phenomenal. It's Dallas Buyers Club. Yeah, McConaughey and Leto are getting accolades for this movie, and they absolutely should. In a world where 12 Years a Slave doesn't exist, you're seeing the best actor right here. And to be completely honest with you, I'm not even sure that it's a slam dunk that he doesn't beat Chewie. McConaughey in this movie is that damn good. And as good as McConaughey is, Leto might be even better. If I didn't know what character Jared Leto was playing, you could easily miss him. It's a dude playing a role that's in no way like just some sort of version of himself. It's a completely a character role. And he does an awesome job of bringing that character to life. Top to bottom, this was a really heavy movie, but really, really good. And it had Jennifer Garner, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah, I would not be opposed to McConaughey or Leto winning this year. And I think we called it from the trailer that it looked like they could. I called that Leto would get an Oscar. I mean, he hasn't yet, but
sure, he will.
It's a chance. And I called it like, oh, that looks like we're going to talk about Oscar nominee Jared Leto. Which, if you think about it, he's an underrated actor. I mean, the dude almost killed himself to play Mark David Chapman. Yeah. I mean, he destroyed his liver gaining all that weight and then losing it. And he's pretty. But this movie was good. This movie, Matthew, it just caps. It's kind of the perfect capper. Chiwetel deserves that Oscar.
Yes.
But if McConaughey got it, and I feel like those are the, I feel like that's a two-man race right there.
I agree.
As good as Bale was, and maybe Hanks and Captain Phillips, but not at this level.
No.
I feel like it's between McConaughey and Chiwetel for the award nominations that haven't even come out yet. But
this was one that
it's a perfect capper off for to what the complete transformation of Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
To where he was your How to Lose a Guy, your rom-com go-to to
Mud.
To
and then
everything he's done in the past 2 years has been phenomenal. And to see him cap it off, even with the nomination, is a really good turnaround. And this movie was really good, but it's a heavy movie. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. My number two, I don't use this term a whole lot, but my number two film this year, absolute masterpiece. It is an absolute perfect movie. If you want charm and heart and laughs and you want to cry and you just want to feel good about life, watch About Time. Richard Curtis, people have always talked about Love Actually being such a great movie. I've never watched it.
Actually.
About Time makes me want to go watch it just because of how beautiful this movie was. And it's Domhnall Gleeson. This guy's a leading man. He doesn't look it, but he carries this movie. Bill Nighy, it's Bill Nighy. That guy is amazing. And Rachel McAdams, who doesn't want to fall in love with her, especially in this role? It's such a cool concept and premise that doesn't rely on that too much. It actually takes a unique concept and makes it work without relying on it too much, if that makes any sense.
I mean, it's the time travel romantic comedy movie.
Yeah.
But that might be overstating things.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Nighy sits down with Domhnall Gleeson and says, hey, males in our family have the ability to time travel. That's your setup. It's never explored further, never explained why, doesn't need to be. It's just Domhnall Gleeson going through and living his life with this ability to time travel. But it avoids being a time travel movie. It stays a love story. And I talk about, I give it a year being a romantic comedy and being shocked that it's number three on my list. This number two, because this might be the best movie I saw this year. I mean, it's so wonderfully acted, and it's everything you want it to be. I mean, it makes you feel amazing. It makes you, understand love. And I cried very hard during this movie at certain points. And it's just about life. And, yes, dub it a romantic comedy if you want to, but it does such a good job encompassing life and how you should just enjoy it and just live every day like you're reliving it. And live every day like you've already done it and you're just doing it again just for fun. And it's so good, and everything it says, everything it does is just perfect. And I sound so pretentious saying it, but it is a goddamn motherfucking masterpiece.
That does sound awfully pretentious. I feel like I've seen a lot of – I've read that in a lot of those snooty online movie reviews.
I stand by it. Put goddamn that on the poster.
Motherfucking amazing. Dave Pacella, movies on up. I may have to go see it then. I think we were both pretty excited about it.
The trailer was great.
Yeah, we don't like necessarily romantic comedies, but the
trailer was great.
Yeah, it looked good. I just
And it's just so well written and acted.
It's about time I see it.
It's phenomenal.
My number two is a movie that you've already talked about. And as much as my number one wasn't exactly set up for me to love, this one was. The Way Way Back, just love Sam Rockwell. I like summer camp-ish kind of movies. I'm kind of on record saying that this movie is meatballs at a water park. And it is. It's an accurate description, and Sam Rockwell does what I had perceived to be impossible. I think I would rather hang out with Sam Rockwell's character than Bill Murray's character from Meatballs. I'm not sure necessarily that kids head to summer camp, stay away summer camps, now quite as much as they did in the 70s and the 80s. So I think that this is a much more relatable movie for the younger generation today. Liam James more than holds his own with the rest of that cast, including people you already mentioned, Carell, Toni Collette, and Sam Rockwell, which is not necessarily an easy task to do. You've got really super talented people. And then this Liam James kid, who I had not really heard a lot from, but he had a lot to do in this movie.
Even with all those names, it's his movie.
Yeah, it certainly is. And again, he carries it. He's got a multidimensional character that I think he's your typical kind of nerd from those summer camp movies. He doesn't have a lot of friends. His parents aren't necessarily
not
great.
Really
That's
nerd,
why he's at summer camp.
Outcast.
Yeah, outcast is probably a better word. But I think he's a more realistic character in that he doesn't just feel like an archetype. He feels like an actual kid. You kind of hit the nail on the head when you said that there were a lot of good coming of age movies. And I mean, to me, I think this was the best one.
Oh, absolutely.
It does show, quite a progression. And a fun progression of Liam James's character. Like, his, all right, damn it, I'm going to stand up for myself moment is silly and ridiculous, but it fits perfectly.
Are you talking the breakdancing scene?
After that, okay. Kind of like in the third act.
Because the breakdance scene is one of my favorite things of the year. I mean, that scene is so great. And everything you've said about, I mean, I'll gush about it again because it was that good. Liam James feeling like a real guy, that sums up the whole movie because Steve Carell felt like a real prick. Like, he felt like the kind of guy you don't want anybody you know to date. But
and Toni Collette is the mom that you just want to say you should know better.
Yeah, and I mean, just there's so many good moments in there. And it's another one, though. It's a feel-good movie. Maybe not the whole way there, but once you get there, it's just good. Like, I don't want to spoil it.
Understated funny, just kind of the offhand remarks that Sam Rockwell makes. Yeah.
Him
and Maya Rudolph, really good.
Yeah, even Sam Rockwell's character felt real. Like, just the guy he's in that situation, that's his life. And Jim Rash, really, or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim Rash, his character, really, really good. Like, oh, I'm leaving
I'm
now.
Getting out of here.
I'm getting out of here. Like, that's funny. And that movie was so good. I do love that movie. And I'm shocked it's not higher, but it was a good year. I mean, we're talking number 8 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I truly love that movie. And just, it brings me joy to talk about it. My number one, we're going to go back overseas. We're going to let Britain be represented on my list. Let it round out my top three. It's a movie that maybe not originated, but capped off the McAvoy turn. It is Filth, written and directed by John S. Baird, based on the unfilmable novel by Irvine Welsh, who also wrote Trainspotting. Talk about an adaptation. I mean, he took this book that, it's silly. It's a ride. It's a trip. They adapted it perfectly. The trailer, again, my top three movies had three of my favorite trailers of the year. But the trailer on this, kind of misleading. Like, yes, it's hilarious. It's funny. It's McAvoy doing really bad stuff. But there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more to this movie. And it's a nice ride. It's a really fun ride, which makes you feel bad saying that. Because we talk about Spectacular Now and World's End dealing with addiction. And this is maybe not addiction. I mean, he ends up coping with loss and dealing with stuff. And it does a really good job. McAvoy, this is the kind of acting that should be nominated for awards. Because everything he delivers in this movie is so spot on. And I'll forever respect McAvoy now. I apologize, Mr. McAvoy, for disliking
you. You're
going to
go back and see Wanted?
Post-Wanted. But he had, between this and Trance, that's two of my favorite movies of the year. And then Welcome to the Punch, I enjoyed as well. So, I mean, I'd buy him as almost anything now. And just this movie, again, not that it's very parallel with Spectacular Now, but you see him doing these awful things, but then occasionally, not as much as with Miles Teller in Spectacular, occasionally you get a glimpse of, like, that's not who he really is. Like, he's just fallen into a trap, and that's what he's doing. And it unravels, and it's sad, and it's heartbreaking, and there's consequences. Like, you understand consequences, and it's kind of gut-wrenching when he realizes, oh, there are consequences to everything I do. And Eddie Marzan shows up in a supporting role and does phenomenal. Imogen Poots, Jamie Bell. The supporting cast is great. And it's just a really, really good movie. It's a lot different than I expected going in. I expected just a coked out Jim McAvoy doing messy stuff for a couple hours. It's a lot more to it than that. And it's one of the best one of the better movies I saw this year, just because of the character progression, the way events transpire.
It would have to be the best movie you saw, right?
It's my favorite movie I saw this year.
All right, yeah.
It's my absolute favorite movie I saw this year. And McAvoy, it's hard to watch this and not love him, because it's so well written. And Irvine Welsh, like, he's a great, phenomenal novelist. And for Baird to come in out of nowhere, I don't even know what that guy's done before, but to adapt this as well as he did. No, he did Green Street Hooligans. It was very, very well done.
Although I think people are going to think from our number ones that perhaps the two of us have some sort of problem with addictions. And I think a lot of the things that you said about filth are applicable to my number one. To watch the trailer, and it is misleading, and it misled me to thinking that I really wasn't going to like the movie all that much. I mean, with all the people involved, I probably should like it. I don't care about financial advisors. I don't care about stocks and bonds and Wall Street and dollar bill, but I absolutely loved The Wolf of Wall Street. We did give a lot of shit to the Golden Globes for classifying some movies as comedies. But this, The Wolf of Wall Street, was the funniest movie I saw all year. And maybe some of that was because I didn't expect it to be a comedy. I did not expect to laugh during Wolf of Wall Street. But I don't think I stopped. We talk about James McAvoy just doing a bunch of drugs and doing terrible things. It really is very similar with The Wolf of Wall Street. You have DiCaprio, you have Jonah Hill just doing mounds and mounds of cocaine, and just the level of depravity that they had with the hookers, with the midgets, with the midget hookers. I mean, it's just so over the top. And to have that from Scorsese, like, the dude is incredible. Any kind of movie, he can make a great, well, except for maybe horror. He's not necessarily a master at horror, but just about any other genre, this guy can do it. And the timing of everybody, I mean, yeah, obviously Jonah Hill's a great comedic actor.
I don't want to say career defining. This is a career role for him. I mean, he was already nominated for Moneyball.
I was going to say Moneyball,
that wasn't very far outside of his wheelhouse. He's one of the, you listen to him talk, he seems like one of the most nicest, sweetest men alive. And to do this role, which is not that, and it just, this is where you look at Jonah Hill and think, like, oh, he's legit. Like, he's legit for everything.
For everything. And everybody in this movie that was kind of allowed to be funny, McConaughey is really only in it for about a scene or two. But the scene he has, you can't take your eyes off him. He's so captivating, so charming. And again, what he's talking about doing, ridiculous.
He's akin to Ben Affleck in Boiler Room.
Yeah, sure. But, oh, my God. Just, I was expecting to like the movie. Because I like DiCaprio. I like Scorsese. But not expecting nearly what I got. And maybe, after I've just talked it up for, however long, you may go into it with really high and overinflated expectations and maybe not enjoy it that much. But sitting in that theater, I think a lot of the folks that were in there kind of thought like me. They were not expecting a comedy. They thought, well, I probably ought to go see this movie because, again, it's Martin Scorsese. It's Leo, Jonah Hill, Matthew McConaughey. And knowing that it got nominated for a bunch of awards, it had to be at least a good movie. But I think everybody was floored at just how funny it was. Maybe if we all would have read the book, we'd have known, but I didn't.
It was a ride. Like, we've said that to sum up a lot of these movies. Like, it was just an enjoyable ride to sit on and just let it take you away. Going into also-rans, we mentioned Spectacular Now and Pacific Rim, which would probably be my 11 and 12. Here, the other ones I had trouble leaving off, Gravity, because it was my most anticipated movie the last two years. And it delivered. It was what I wanted. I mean, it was good. It was really, really good. Quarren, what he did behind the camera was amazing. Sandra Bullock was good, but I can't. It doesn't bring me the joy that my top 10 do. So, I mean, it's up there. It deserves, she deserves acting nom. He deserves director nom. Kick-Ass 2. Talk about surprises. I had really low expectations for that. I really loved Kick-Ass 2. It took a while to get going. Watching it the first half hour or so makes it feel like, they're not really capturing it. But then it turns into its own movie instead of just the sequel to Kick-Ass. And once it becomes its own, essentially standalone movie, it delivers. It was really, really good. Maybe because my expectations were so low, but I really liked Kick-Ass 2. Hellbaby, I love anything Thomas Lynn and Ben Grant.
I'm glad you bring up Hellbaby, because that and Bad Milo are kind of forever going to be linked because they came out pretty close together,
both
horror
state
comedies. Yeah. And again, I thought they were both really good. I liked Hellbaby much more.
Oh, I liked Hellbaby a lot more, yeah.
But there again, you know, you talk about the state of horror, and this was a down year for horror. You had those two, and I guess, you know, people call Your Next a horror comedy, and I guess...
I don't see the comedy in it. I mean, it had funny moments, but I think that's a straight-up horror movie.
I do, too.
I think Your Next is the next one on my also-ran list.
Sure, but I mean, those three are all good. I loved Stitches. I liked Maniac. I mean, that's five. I think, and maybe people will argue with me about Maniac.
I guess I looked at Bad Milo and Hellbaby more as comedies, and they didn't really pop up in my when I was thinking of horror movies. But I thought Hellbaby was great. I love Michael Keegan Key, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He stole it. He's so good. The eating gag was so funny every time they went back to it.
The porn below the house. Like, yeah, every time he's in the movie, it's tremendous.
But Your Next I thought was great. I thought that was... Your Next was what I wanted Hatchet to be. Your Next felt like just a classic throwback horror movie, American horror movie, and it was good. I feel like it did okay at the box office, but I feel like it, for the most part, went under the radar. And these people understand it. It just makes me angry that the VHS movies aren't better, because these people, this collective, know how to make a good horror movie, and Your Next was one of them. And then one that I guess this maybe it's a 2013 movie, maybe it's a 2014 movie, but Lone Survivor. We'll talk about it more next week, maybe.
Next week, probably.
The only ones I haven't seen that I feel like could jump on there, Her, which I'll see this week, which I think is we're 2014 now, so yeah. I guess that's a 2014 movie. And In a World, the Lake Bell movie. I just, something about that and everybody involved, I feel like I'll like that a lot. I just haven't seen it. But then I also have a list of like other movies that I love that I liked a lot, like Fruitvale Station. It's like 12 Years a Slave, where really,
you can't really enjoy that movie.
It's hard to say like, oh, I love that movie, I want to watch that a million times. So Fruitvale Station and 12 Years a Slave, two of the best acting performances of the year. Like, I think it's a shame Michael B. Jordan's not going to be nominated for an Oscar, but I think it's great that Chewie's the front runner. I also like This, The End, Despicable Me, 2, It's a Disaster, Sightseers. We mentioned American Hustle. I dropped Open Grave and Kings of Summer. But like, even your mainstream, like The Heat and We're the Millers, I thought were really good. Like,
yeah, pleasant surprises.
I thought it was a solid year, like a really solid year for movies, for me.
No, I agree with you. There were a lot that I liked. I mean, it was kind of tough for me not to put The Hobbit on there. I liked that an awful lot.
It was okay. I wish I lived in a world where I loved the Hobbit movies as much as I love the Lord of the Rings movies.
Entirely different book. I mean, this, they tried to cater more towards you.
And I saw through it, I think, is my problem.
Probably.
Like, the Legolas stuff was cool, but the rafting, the water scene with the barrels and stuff, I don't need that. Like, that, I felt like that was pandering to me, and it's like...
It was. The barrels were in the book, but there was no...
You don't
no
know
fight
me.
Scene,
like,
right?
That's, you think that's what I want, but that's the last
Shut
thing
up, Peter
I want.
Jackson. You even know me.
Pretty much. That's... Yeah.
I guess the only one that I kind of did want to mention, and as much as it hurts to say it, I kind of did enjoy Pain and Gain. The fact that it was, you talk about The Wolf of Wall Street being like, some of that stuff actually happened. A lot of it actually happened. Well, Pain and Gain's very similar. And we talked during our uppies about how, you know, this was, you know, a great year for Dwayne Johnson. And, you know,
it was a busy year for Dwayne Johnson.
Well, yeah, I say great in that it was, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. It was a great year for Dwayne Johnson. But, you know, I think Wahlberg was really good in that, too. And just kind of the transformation that he's had to blow up for Pain and Gain. He was in, I can't remember the other movie he did this year. But
Two Guns.
Even before that, there was another one where he had to kind of, like, shrink down. Yeah, I mean, Two Guns I thought was another really kind of fun action movie. But, you know, then obviously Lone Survivor. So, I mean, I thought, you know, really good year for Marky Mack.
Broken City?
Yeah, sure. That was, I don't, I didn't see it. I was just like, oh, there's another Wahlberg movie out there that
and
I
And then
missed.
He comes back with Transformers next year.
Yeah, well, dude's got to eat.
Yeah.
Actually, let's just for fun, why don't you run down just the titles of your top 10, just to kind of cap things off.
Oh, okay. Star Trek Into Darkness, Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, The Way, Way Back, The World's End, Trance, Elysium, The East, I Give It a Year, About Time, and filth.
Mine, number 10, Oblivion. Number 9, Thanks for Sharing. Number 8, American Hustle. Number 7, Stitches. Number 6, Pacific Rim. Number 5, The Spectacular Now. Number 4, Maniac. Number 3, Dallas Buyers Club. Number 2, The Way, Way Back. And number 1, The Wolf of Wall Street. I suspect that my list will probably be the only one you'll come across that has The Wolf of Wall Street and
Maniac
on it. Yeah, but what can I say? I like me some Maniac. Let us know what your 5 favorite, what your 10 favorite are of the year. There's a couple that were on Dave's list that I haven't gotten around to seeing yet, About Time being one of them. Sometimes movies do slip through the cracks. I was just telling Dave, my God, I've seen so much, but I forgot to see Nebraska. So I'm going to have to get around to that eventually. Help us out. Let us know your favorite movie of the year, and maybe we missed out on it and forgot to see it, and I'm sure we would love to go back and check it out. You can let us know your thoughts, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet your thoughts at us at moviesonup on the Twitter, or post it right on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup.
You can find me at Dave Pacella on Twitter, davepacella.com. Listen to my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave, and there'll be some cool stuff coming up this year at some point.
Of course, we're not done with you this week. We've given you our favorite movies from last year, coming up probably very soon, maybe very late this week, probably tomorrow, will be our most anticipated movies of this year, of 2014. So make sure you check that out. As well as next week, we've got 2 episodes for you. It'll be our Golden Globes wrap-up, as well as a, I don't want to call it a battleship-themed episode, because it's going to be probably mostly Lone Survivor.
That's Battlefield and Lone Survivor. We're going to kind of look at the two of them.
Both directed by Peter Berg, starring,
Taylor Kitsch. Taylor Kitsch.
So it seems like a interesting contrast. So we'll do those two things next week. And until then,
keep it up!